Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We talk about politics and current issues and have a good time doing it. On the left with State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hey, hello, Natalie.
And on the political right, Representative Dan McKay.
Hey, Natalie, I'm surprised it wasn't Jim Goodtime DeBacchus, you know, because when we have a good time, it's always Jim.
Well, we love talking issues. We have a lot of chemistry in the studio, but I wanted to talk for just a minute about the UtahPolicy.com. Most political folks follow that website. They did some scoring of, I guess, your voting records?
It was actually BYU that did it. They reported it.
Okay, Utah Policy reported it.
From BYU, Professor Brown, I think.
Well, so, Jim, what? It showed you as the most far-left senator.
Yes!
Legislator.
Yes.
No surprise.
Sometimes that darn Brian Chiazawa tries to claim that territory,
right.
But no, I haven't.
Yes.
So that's why you represent the political left. And then in their scoring, they had Representative Dan McKay as the most conservative?
Wow.
Far right?
Yeah.
Is this right?
According to the statistics, but I question the bills that they choose. It's always this mm-hmm. weird thing. But it's a professor out of BYU, and we can never disagree with them. Right, Jim?
Exactly. Except in basketball.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got the left and right, really on the polar extremes. And then I get to sit here in the comfortable, productive center, making sure good things happen. Let's talk about the big news of the week. There's a lot, but Governor Herbert endorsing John Curtis pre-primary for the, is it second congressional district?
Third.
Third congressional district. I worked in a governor's office. That didn't happen. You waited till the primary was over and then you endorsed the Republican person.
Yeah, unless the polls are right now showing, and it really depends, I guess, on how the polls are, because I haven't seen anything internally. But if there is a clear winner, or two, the clearer winner is not who you want to be, and you want to legitimize the other candidate, a gubernatorial endorsement can go a long way, I think.
Well, and Herbert, I don't know what his approval rating is these days, but it's going to be high 70s, low 80s.
Yeah.
Fair. Jim?
I think, actually, you're going to say it's all political and Herbert occasionally just looks through it all, and we are talking about an extremist beyond measure.
I mean, John Curtis? He's not
No,
come on, Jim.
I'm talking about King Herod there. And I'm just saying, here's how it is in the real blogosphere of the left. They're saying, give us back Jason Chaffetz when they see what Herod is all about. I mean, he is prepared to detonate off as seriously quite a stroke of Utah that probably, at least from my perspective, would not be good for our state.
You know what's additionally interesting to that, Jim, though, is look at no one in the legislature is really supporting Herod, and no one in the legislature is really out there supporting John Curtis.
But they're just staying neutral?
They have been until this last week. And now members of the legislature in the 3rd Congressional District are supporting Ainge.
Because Herbert.
No. No, they're on the other side.
So the legislature hates Herbert.
You've got legislators, including hardcore caucus convention people, supporting
Tanner Ainge. Wow.
And then you've got the governor now out there supporting, John Curtis, Mayor Curtis. And it's really shaping into what I think will be a very melodramatic ending.
Yeah, this is a Republican Party that's got some fireworks.
Why is the legislature going after Ainge? Just because Herbert went after...
No. You mean supporting Ainge?
Yeah, why are they supporting him?
I think if you go back and watch the debate and listen to what Tanner Ainge offered from a debate perspective, he is a very credible candidate. And Jim, unlike, you and I, and there are several who are saying, people that just trade on name recognition, that's ridiculous. But if you go listen to the substance of what he said in the debate, I walked away saying, all right, that's somebody I'd like to work with.
Dan, how does this work in your political life? Did you just listen to it online, or did you go to this debate?
Do I have to admit that I actually go to this stuff?
Okay, I'm just interested. You're a very busy professional guy with a large family, and you go to these things.
Yeah, because I can't help it. And plus, when are you going to have a debate between three candidates, and there were two other people on the stage.
Yeah.
When are you going to have a debate like this where public policy is the focus? It so rarely happens these days.
Yeah.
You know, when you've got a big senatorial race in the state, one senator, the senator ends up hiding from debate and, you know, then trades on incumbency. Rarely do you have an open seat where everybody kind of has this third.
Well, so
my kids watched
John Curtis snags Herbert's endorsement. Chris Herod has Senator Ted Cruz coming to town.
Yeah.
That's big. That's got to say a lot in Utah County.
Doesn't that add a lot of national credibility to his campaign?
Well, I'm surprised once again that Cruz would do that in local politics. But
well, if you look at what Cruz stands for with the Senate Conservative Fund and some of the other things that he really works hard for in the Senate, I'm certain that the last thing they want to see is somebody who is on the right side of the issues, and I say right just meaning political leaning.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Political leaning.
Oh, right. Okay.
Well, and you could also say from Ted Cruz's perspective, he's all right, and he's also right in my world, I guess. But Congressman Chaffetz leaving, and then to replace them with somebody who is not similar to their view would probably be difficult for them as well, and they could view as a loss.
Yeah, interesting. Hey, we also had Salt Lake County Recorder Gary Ott's plans revealed this week that we'll see a resignation August 1.
Finally.
Yeah, this is progress.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's getting where it needs to get. Jim, are you?
I hope we come up with some kind of a legislative situation to cure this later. I mean, he could have been in there because of a freak of nature situation, he had a 6-year term, mm-hmm. and he could have been in there for a lot longer. We really need to deal with
this. The top one I would want is fewer elected officials in technical positions.
Amen.
At the county level.
So I am reaching across the aisle, and Mayor McAdams and I are actually working on a bill to give the county the ability to look at their budgets and make appropriate decisions about, you know, where offices should be where. But I think part of that needs to be enabling the county and the council to have a vote and make a decision on whether or not they themselves need a recorder and need a surveyor as an elected position. Jim, is there, in your mind, is there a Republican way to survey a property?
Well, I was going to run for surveyor, but...
Or is there a Democrat? Well,
You would be a good candidate for it because it's doesn't matter what your ideology is.
Because it has to do with Dan Jones and surveyors are
really
political.
Property lines.
Oh,
property lines.
That's what they mean by
so surveyors. Is there a Republican way or a Democratic way or an independent American, whatever it might be, is there a way to do those surveys that way?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You
what about auditors
competence.
Or school boards?
Yeah, well, auditor is a different deal. The problem, the nice thing about having auditor independently elected is they are then responsible not to the council for their job. They're responsible to the voters. And I think the auditor needs that protection. They need to be separated.
Yeah, really interesting.
But those, Natalie, you're right. Technical positions, electing those. Of course, guess who's coming after me and mad that this is a consideration?
The surveyors.
The surveyors, right? Because they're licensed land surveyors, and they believe that there's a licensed land surveyor, you know, a reason to have them be independent from the council and all these other things, and I just don't see it. I can't imagine even the most liberal Democrat wanting to issue a blow to the American property system in the state of Utah.
Yeah, well, good for you reaching across the aisle and working with a good mayor.
I mean, this needs to be done.
Hey, okay.
What if we did it?
You're the sponsor.
All right.
You heard it right here first.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined by Representative Dan McKay and Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Wait. That means Jim's going to pass his first bill.
If he co-pons it with you. I'm with you.
I'm very excited about where this is going.
I'm not even sure I want to carry it. No, all right. Okay.
In our next segment, guys, let's talk about Utah House Speaker Greg Hughes and his work as a homeless czar. The guy has been busy.
Mm.
Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
This is Dan McKay on the way away from Jim, right?
This is Jim DeBacchus in that far center. Oh, no, that's you, Natalie. On the far left and proud of it from the People's Republic of Salt Lake City.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We still have a lot of local news to talk about, but let's just take a minute and talk about some big national news this week, and that was Mike Pence casting the tie-breaking vote for this sort of procedural move in the Senate to allow debate to continue on health care. That was a mouthful. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't know what we want to say to listeners, but Jim, why did this rise?
I think we need to talk about what Utah's participation in this.
Okay, let's do it.
It means Mike Lee or Orrin Hatch could have destroyed the Affordable Care Act or to let it sit there. Hatch personally has been going after Lee. I don't know if you've been seeing it in a way that I've never seen one Utah senator go after the other.
I've noticed this.
It's personal. It's going after him. But Lee caved. At the last minute, he went with the crowd and he procedurally said, okay, let's keep it alive. It'll be interesting to see where this bromance between Hatch and Lee, who apparently can't even stand to be in the same room together, goes, and if they can actually get together on
I've seen them in the same room several times, Jim.
Yeah, but you don't know what they were texting to each other.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, and I worry more about their staffs, because that's where a lot of things happen. And if that gets mean-spirited, that can be tough.
But see, that would be very short-sighted of Mike, because you're talking about the Senate pro tem.
Yeah.
Right. So as much as Mike wants, as much as Senator Lee would like to, you know, harangue Orrin Hatch, or Orrin Hatch would like to. Honestly, I never see Mike going after Senator Hatch, by the way.
Yeah.
I always see Senator Hatch in a very, in my opinion, very petty way, pointing the finger at Mike Lee. And although Senator Hatch brags about being the one that can work with anybody, he cannot work within his own state. And I think that identity crisis, While Orrin likes to point at Mike, I think it just shows, in my opinion, Orrin's pettiness. Sorry.
Mm, wow. You heard it here from the political right.
Yeah, no doubt.
Hey, Jim, I'm interested to hear your comments on what on earth Donald Trump is doing with his attorney general. It's as if he doesn't realize that this guy works for him and at his pleasure, and he's just doing a public, I don't know,
ritual humiliation.
Yeah. Yes, of this person that was one of the first senators to come out for him. And it just doesn't seem very presidential.
I think, imagine
understatement
that.
Trump, of
you almost, you said that with a straight face. I was so impressed.
You know, it's a man who you know didn't get the feeling that we get, we commoners, when we walk into the White House, and it's not like it happens all the time, but it's happened two or three times in my life. And as I go up the stairs, and I've never gone in any other way than the main stairs there, and as I look around, and as I look at that staircase that goes up to the private headquarters or the private quarters, and as I look over at the pictures of the presidents and in the East Room and they're in the dining room, and as you hear the Marine Band, if you don't get emotional, if you don't feel a lump in your throat, if you don't understand what this country is about by walking in that building, and maybe it's different if you're there every day, but I don't think Donald Trump ever had that feeling.
Yeah.
I don't, and I think it goes through not just the building, but I think he has no understanding or respect for the office, for the dignity, for the history, and for the weight of the office. I think it's all just like some kind of a business deal for him. And, and I think that's the only way to explain, this is the way you might humiliate somebody on your business team.
So you know what I think is going to be very interesting is we had Sean Spicer resign, the former press secretary. I am betting what they would call a kiss and tell book is on its way.
Oh, interesting.
Right? So when I was
in... You think Spicer kissed Trump?
When I was in Washington, Scott McClellan was President Bush's spokesperson, and he wrote a kiss and tell book.
He
so this
did.
Is one where you had the benefits of being a political appointee and all this access and saw things, and then you leave and say a lot of things that would say that, you know, you were not loyal, for lack of a better way of saying it. And I think Sean Spicer could share some really interesting stories in the near term. The question is, will he do it?
Yeah. Boy, that would be a very intriguing book for a lot of people to read.
Especially
no
in the near term, right? We know there'll be things that come out down the road, but Sean has been privy to some things.
Yeah, although, I mean, that's the Spicer issue. I didn't really get a chance to talk about Sessions, but if you're a political appointee, I don't care where you think your bread is buttered, you know, you serve at the behest of the president, right? And whether, you know, if you don't respond privately and you don't respond publicly and it breaks down to the president and you, you know, there being this melee between you on Twitter, to me, that seems like there's a broken element of the administration that isn't working as strongly. I would like to say that's the only point of the administration that seems to have these kind of struggles, but it is seems to be a recurring theme.
Everywhere.
You know? But I still think, you know, one way or the other, I still think that Trump is upsetting the political class, and it is. And Sessions, if he wants to maintain that element of things and buy into that line, then he can. But I think it's at his own demise. Trump is setting this tenor, this tone in his presidency that there isn't going to be this, you know, business as usual mentality.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And
very
like
clear.
It or not.
Hey, so we have a Trump-like figure in our Speaker of the House. And I need to explain this. Because I think the world of Greg Hughes, I really do. But Greg is one who speaks it like it is. He's one that can create some commotion and drama at times. He's a bit of a fighter. Mm-hmm. We know that about him.
Yep.
So I'd love to hear both of your commentary on what he's doing on the homeless issues. He had a war room at Rio Grande to discuss homelessness. And he's, I don't know, he's turning some heads. Comments, color commentary, guys.
I love, see, this is my favorite thing about Greg Hughes that most people just don't understand unless you work on the inside of issues. And since it's been 3 years that Greg, you know, since Greg's worked on like an issue-oriented thing, I don't know anybody who exhausts themselves more once they decide to marry an issue than Greg Hughes.
He will come in shock and awe. He will do everything required.
Oh, yeah. You know, they talk about the, I can't remember what dog it is that has the lockjaw, right? And once they lock in,
that's him.
Don't bother trying
chihuahua.
To talk them out of it, right? Yeah. So I think Hughes is very much that way. And early reports, so I had a friend who had lunch with him this week, and they were just talking about a bunch of issues and some of Hughes' proposed solutions. And my buddy and I were talking today, and he's very excited about some of the pragmatic ideas. So,
Jim, do you see any of those Trump characteristics in our speaker, and is he a pit bull?
Look, Greg is just wrong on most things.
Oh, come on.
You know, really, well, I could go down the
litany. He's the political right. We'd expect you to say that.
I could go down the litany of things, but I'll tell you. I think he's doing this because he cares about the homeless and the rest, but I also think he understands that we're going to have a gubernatorial race here soon, and he needs everybody in the political biosphere knows what the Speaker of the House is and know what they do and recognize how important they are. But, you know, most people around the state don't know.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of thing where he's just taking this battle on and ripping that baby to shreds and taking over, taking control from the city, the county, sending out these orders, kind of, saying you're either on board. I think that he's setting himself a marker, and people are going to recognize who he is, especially here in Salt Lake County, but across the state. And what I like about him is I think Herbert has just been such a ditherer, and he isn't that. Even though he's going in the wrong direction, at least he's going in a direction.
So he's a ditherer or he's a cipher? I mean, earlier in the broadcast, you were talking about how he's a cipher of
Herbert?
All things good and true.
Herbert?
Yeah, but in the Congressional 3rd District.
Yeah, well, you know, people
hey,
are...
Dan, you're in the body. Target. You're in the body. What's it like having Speaker Hughes as your leader? I mean,
It's fun.
It's fun. Is he aggressive? Is he forceful? Or is he a listener? Is he...
Well,
very proactive.
All of the above.
Uh-huh.
You know, the one thing that I don't understand, I'm not the speaker, and I think a lot of people don't understand unless you've been the speaker. It doesn't matter what event you go to anywhere in the state, members of the body find you, right? Mm-hmm. Republican, mm-hmm. Democrat, doesn't
mm-hmm.
matter.
Mm-hmm.
And they're peppering the speaker on a regular basis about issues they care about. Right. So he is constantly peppered via text message, phone call, at every event.
even though the public is on him too, and the outside political class, they're on him too, but members of the body are on him. And so I think he has no choice but to listen, right? And so I think listening is an important part mm-hmm. of the job. Mm-hmm. And I think the other part of it then is if you hear the same thing, and I remember Speaker Lockhart told me this one time, and it was specifically around the investigation for the Attorney General. When you hear the same thing everywhere you go in the state and they're all talking about the same thing,
yeah.
you as the speaker are empowered. And guess what he's got everybody talking about right now? Homelessness.
Yeah. So
he's a leader.
Well, so
he is.
So I was thinking from the political center, if I am Ben McAdams, if I'm Mayor Biskupski, I'm so thrilled that the speaker is making this a priority and spending time on it because he's a powerful person.
Yeah.
And now the governor, the governor's having his big meetings now on homelessness.
Is that
right?
And
he's inviting everybody over and pretending. Give me a break.
Interesting. Hey, I was at, it's Pioneer Week or Pioneer Day was this week. I was at the parade. There weren't a lot of politicians in the parade, I noticed. Did you guys attend the parade? Were you there?
I think Chris Stewart was one of the few.
I heard his name. Yeah. I didn't know if it was from a military perspective or if he...
He was just in a car. I didn't,
okay.
you know...
You were at the parade, it sounds like.
Yeah, it wasn't, but I don't remember seeing anybody else.
Governor Herbert. Governor Herbert
was there, yeah.
Yeah, and Mayor Biskupski was there.
And that's is a pretty limited...
Is it they don't let him in? Do you apply to go in? How does it work?
I think it's just an application, and you just, you
and
get...
There are more politicians in the Murray City 4th of July parade than in the 24th of July parade.
Yeah, and I think, though, maybe this is true, maybe it's not. The governor's there because the governor administers the whole state. Mm-hmm. Chris Stewart's there. That's his legislative district. That's his congressional district. Uh-huh. And Mayor Biskupski, she's the mayor, and I'm sure the council was
maybe
there on a council float type of thing.
Yeah.
And they may keep it at that. So that might be one rule of the float deal, because I don't know. But the other thing possible is that from a policymaking and feedback position, Salt Lake City is becoming less relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
that there's
Jim,
more.
That's,
hear you.
That's
I would
where
say
the parade committee decides?
No, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, if politicians were deciding whether or not they were going to go to the parade.
They're going to go up and be in the bountiful handcart days.
I see what you mean.
There's more likelihood
Jim, comment
getting it out
on
of
that.
Murray.
Salt Lake City becoming less relevant?
Well, I don't think it's less. I just think that the people in Salt Lake think a lot differently than, mm-hmm. People say to me, why don't you just pipe down and get along and go? You'll get more done. Baloney, I won't get more done. They're not going to do what I want. So the question is, as long as they're not going to do what I want anyway, should I just sit in the corner and smile and be happy? Or should I point out the serious problems that my constituents view?
Yeah.
So I don't know whether Salt Lake is less or not, but it doesn't think the way suburban and a lot of rural Utah think.
So I have a funny story. I was in charge of a float for this parade for my stake. I'm LDS. And most people know that that's like the worst church calling you can have is to be over the float for the 24th.
Yeah.
I had the great help.
What did you do wrong?
I had the great help of a guy named Chris Knapp that really shouldered this. But our float had this huge silver telescope. You'll remember it, Dan, if you were there, with a satellite dish that was going around.
Actually moving.
And an eyeball that was moving on the front. It was a very techno, different, no glitter.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm so proud of KSL.com because on their story, they featured our float on the banner.
All right.
The banner story. We didn't get any awards. We didn't do anything, but the Murray, Utah Stake float got its play on KSL.com.
Brought to you by Natalie Gochner for governor. It said on the bottom. I thought that was great.
Hey, guys, we got to go to gripes. And I know Dan hates to follow you, Jim, but so let's have Dan go first.
Okay. My gripe is my daughter is away on trek this week, and I am like
this is
jonesing.
Reenactment of the Mormon Pioneers.
Right.
For
and,
those
you
who
know,
don't
yeah,
know what trek is.
That.
They go out to Wyoming, and they grab a handcart, and
this
they
heat.
Suffer.
Yeah.
Right?
And they walk, and they walk, and walk.
Suffering is the secret to happiness. Nobody understands this, but you don't really know how happy you are until you've suffered some other way. I believe this to be true.
Yeah, very good.
So that being said, my daughter is out suffering in the plains of Wyoming. She has no connection. I'm used to getting a text from her every day, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Just little talks. As a dad, I'm like combing social media from people that are, and I see no pictures. So my gripe is, I hope my kid's okay.
Yeah. Jim, your gripe.
My gripe is not so much a gripe as an information fact. And I bumped into Senator Hatch's speech he gave on impeachment.
When was this?
This was in the Clinton impeachment.
Okay, I was going to say, this isn't recent.
No.
Where he says, when all is said and done, I must fulfill my oath and do my duty. I will vote guilty on both Article 1 and Article 2. It's the most sanctimonious, unbelievable thing you ever want to read in your life. So go to my Facebook page, Senator DeBacchus, and read Orrin Hatch's talk about impeachment.
Very good. Listen, I'm still getting over Pioneer Day or Pioneer Days and being in charge of the float. So,
Pioneer.
So, Dan, you mentioned suffering. I have suffered for the past year being in charge of a float. I'm free. I know what happiness is now. I can move on to other things.
You did such a good job. Expect the calling next year.
Yeah, be careful. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. It's been fun chatting with State Senator Jim DeBacchus and Representative Dan McKay. Our program is produced by Emily Means. Thanks, everyone, for listening.